Hey, welcome to the film podcast. Yeah. Laugh, guys. Come on.
We just sound jokes. Like it's canned laughter.
Look how excited we are. No, today we're doing a cool special series that we're starting. I think we'll do one every other month because it takes forever to get everybody on board with all the movies. Today we're doing a new series. We're starting a new series called Director's Cut. So we'll discuss the work of one director, and Brandon Bennett is here. It's his brainchild. So who did you pick for this to kick off the series?
Well, you suggested, and I agreed, Michael Mann, because A, good choice, stylistic, distinctive, a lot of similarities among all of his movies, also shorter filmography for the purposes of a pilot episode of a thing.
Yeah. So, had you seen all the movies, his movies, or
I had not. That was another reason for this, because I thought it'd be a good excuse to fill in some blind spots. Yeah. I had not, for myself, I had not seen Ali or Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, that's how you say it.
Yeah. Wow.
I was calling him Ali the whole time.
Yeah. Muhammad, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that's weird. No.
But I haven't seen it. It is
weird.
Wait,
so you hadn't seen Ali and you hadn't seen Last of the Mohicans?
Yeah.
That's weird.
It is weird.
I mean, Last of the Mohicans more than Ali.
Was there a Michael Mann movie you haven't seen?
I had never seen Manhunter.
What? Really? Wow. See, that's weird to me.
I was a kid, the trailers looked really dumb to me.
What?
Trailers at that time were all really dumb.
Like I knew what it was and I was old enough. I was like, well, I've already seen Silence of the Lambs. Like
different book, different movie.
Yeah, I realize that. But it still looked dumb.
So you had seen Red Dragon before Manhunter?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
Ugh. That's where you guys went wrong there.
Yeah, I know.
Kevin, had you...
Not in my mind.
Had you missed any of the movies?
I mean, I hadn't seen Ali.
Oh, okay. Look who got all the shit first out of the gate.
Yeah.
I think that was more for Last of the Mohicans.
I feel like, is there something?
Yeah,
it was Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah.
Jenny, I agree. How many movies
did I see?
Did you
had
see?
I seen?
Yeah.
I'd seen Public Enemies.
What else?
And I'd seen Part of Heat.
Part of it?
Part of Heat. And that's it. That's all I'd seen.
Wow.
It was a whole experience.
And you've seen... Did you see two versions of Public Enemies?
Yes. Yeah. I saw the original cut with Michael Mann actually there. And then we saw like the later version that was actually the theatrical release.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm excited about to talk about when we get to that point. But where do you want to start off?
Oh, wait. Actually, I also hadn't seen The Insider ever.
Oh.
I'd never seen The Insider, and I'd never seen The Keep.
Okay.
No one here had seen The Keep.
Yeah.
I forgot about The Keep.
I had started Keep.
I saw The Keep about a year
and
ago.
And I got to the same spot in rewatching it for this episode. I was like, oh, right, that's where I stopped watching this movie.
Yeah.
Was it the... Well, we'll get there in a second.
Yeah. Where do you want to start off?
Well, let's... Okay, so the first... He was a TV guy from Chicago, went to London, got a master's...
Commercials first.
He did commercials. Well, yeah, commercials, documentaries. First documentary was Insurrection. I believe that one was about the Paris riots.
I thought it was about the film school riots or whatever, when they were like all upset about the changing, like the firing of the leader of the
in Paris, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. But that's honestly as much as I know about it. I could not find it for the life of me.
I mean, either.
And then there was a short, Jaanpuri. I don't know much about that either. 17 Days Down the Line, which is a documentary following a road trip from Chicago to L.A. And then he got started in TV, wrote the first four episodes of Starsky and Hutch, which I've also not seen. anyone else?
But he only wrote them.
He only wrote them. He didn't direct them.
Director's cut. Yeah. So.
He helped get it going.
Yeah.
But his first feature, I guess, was a television feature, The Jericho Mile.
Yes.
1979, yep. Starring Peter Strauss, Brian Dennehy, who played Stiles? Guy gets killed, Roger something?
Oh, Richard Lawson?
Richard Lawson, yes.
So we'll start there.
Let's start there.
All right. So this was made for TV movie. I think it was ABC.
Mm-hmm.
It aired on ABC. Actually, did really. I mean, it did pretty good. I mean, yeah, it won a bunch of Emmys.
Won five Emmys.
Editing, yeah. I think, best directing.
Did it get best screenplay also?
Best screenplay.
And then did Lawson? Did Peter Strauss get best actor?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
So okay, here we go. Outstanding film editing, outstanding lead actor, outstanding writing, American Cinema Editors Award for best editing, Directors Guild of America outstanding directing achievement for Michael Mann. So, for a TV movie. So it was a TV movie of the week.
And I haven't seen any TV movies from around that time, but it was pretty great.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah. And from what I read, like, this is a movie that kind of the studios, like, watched, and they were like, well, you can do whatever you want for your next movie because this is really good.
I think I read, I don't know how apocryphal it is, but he got, like, 22 feature film offers after this.
And he's like, I want to do Thief.
But it's about a guy in prison for murder. He's a good runner. The setup is weird because I don't know how this all works within the prison system. But the warden and some... like the Olympics,
He's in. He's on like death row because he like.
I don't think he's in death
row. He's a lifer.
He's
like murdering his dad
for murdering his dad. Yeah,
yeah. But the Olympics take an interest in this prisoner who runs really well, and so then they start training, and that's intermixed with prison politics of like drugs and the three main power groups: the blacks, whites, and Latinos.
Yeah.
Brian Dennehy being the leader of the. White supremacists.
Yeah.
What was weird to me about that is that it wasn't like, oh, hey, some of the white guys from the white supremacists. It was all the white guys, and all the Mexican guys, and all the black. Like there were no holdouts. It's like every white guy at the prison was a white supremacist.
Hey, that's what you got to do, you know.
One of which was Richard Mall.
Oh yes, Richard Mall. What is my favorite line that Richard Mall said? I wrote it down. Oh, he in the right before a fight. So they're going to rebuild, or they're going to build up the jogging track in the prison, and so they've ordered all the prisoners and the white supremacists have a picket line, and they're going to stop everyone from working. And Richard Mall, Bull from Night Court, if anyone doesn't know, yells and calls a guy a Mexican crackerjack man.
That's like a great like insult, but not an insult.
But he's got long hair, like it's this really weird
it
look for
really
Richard
Mall. Really weird to see him like that.
I didn't notice until halfway through the movie. Though, Bull.
Well, because I was looking for him. I saw his name in the credits. I was like, "Where's Richard Mall? When's he going to show up?" And I was like, "Wait a minute, like in the steel shop or whatever."
Yeah,
it was really weird.
Yeah, that's when I noticed him too.
And this kind of started the trend of like with him with Michael Mann with casting like really great character actors.
Yes,
like they're just amazing.
I would say this is a template for everything he's done. Yeah. Like starting from here, everything has kind of been the same. It's more complicated than that, but it's all following the same rules.
Yes,
stuff you know the. Heavy research, like all the background players. This was filmed at Folsom Prison with prisoners. Like all of the background players are all prisoners of Folsom Prison.
Yep.
So they just went in and filmed it.
I think he likes when he puts in real characters. He likes to switch them around. Like some of the guy like technical advisors that were like ex-cons. He'd put them as like police guards.
Yes.
And then the police technical advisors he'd put as criminals.
Yeah, he. We can talk about it more in Heat, but in one of the like Heat making ofs, he talks specifically about wanting to individualize characters.
Yeah.
So he wants, if there's two people in the scene, he wants them to be cast against one another so that they both seem more fully formed than they are.
Yeah.
If they only have like two or three lines.
And then this isn't in this movie, but also in Thief, Dennis Farina plays a thug, but he was a Chicago cop.
He was one of the guys he met rolling around at the Chicago police doing research.
So this movie, I want to start doing this thing. I don't know if you want to, but I'd like to get like, I don't know if it's a good idea, but like, Letterboxd ratings for each movie that we talk about. Like how, what did you rate it? Like how much did you like it? That's what I want to know.
Oh.
So for the Jericho Mile,
Letterboxd if you're listening.
Letterboxd grade. Yeah. So one, you could, give it, up to 5 stars, 1 to 5 stars. Halves you count as well. I'd give it a 3. It was like a good, solid, like fun movie.
I'd say 3.5.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Jenny, did you see this?
No, I couldn't watch this one.
That's all right.
Sorry.
It was hard to get a hold of it. Yeah. This one was hard. Yeah. Adam found it.
Because I was reading about it, and then I saw like a clip. There's the clip, I think it was on YouTube, of Peter Strauss and, oh shit, I always forget his name.
Richard Lawson?
No, Jeffrey Lewis. The guy who's in, he's in the Every Which Way But Loose. Mm-hmm. And Any Which Way You Can with Clint Eastwood. He's the guy who, like...
Oh, yeah.
Is this the scene where he's talking about his father? He plays the...
Not where he's talking about the father. When he's talking about the running. Like, their first meeting. Like, I found
that... Oh, the trainer.
No.
Jeffrey Lewis. He's like a counselor.
I remember.
Yeah. He's the counselor. Okay, yes. Yeah. And he's talking... And, like, Peter Strauss is like, I'm here. I killed him. I did it. I'm supposed to be here.
If you want to listen to that scene, I have it queued up.
It's really good.
Okay. Play it.
You know, I loved the man. I mean, I loved him. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I just tell myself a Jack story, you know?
Maybe both feelings aren't true.
He was drunk, okay? And he was bashing my stepsister. And she's 14 years old. And he is bashing her all the time. And I walk in on him. And there he is. And I know, man, this stops. I mean, he was an animal. So I know this is gonna end. And if it puts me in here for the rest of my life, then that's okay. Because somebody has gotta stop this, you see? Somebody has gotta stop this bad seed. It has gotta stop. They told me that I shot him over and over again. If they put me in here, then that's okay. I mean, I did what I had to do. And once he, took me to Ocean Park when I was six. We had this big yellow car, and there's Guy Lombardo music playing on the radio. My mom had this dress, you know, with big flowers. And he won me one of those goldfish in the carny booth knocking over milk bottles. And he picked me up, and he took me over to the shooting gallery so I could shoot, and... Man, the sun was on the water, on the pier, right underneath us, you know. And he held me on his shoulders all day. And he held me up there all day.
As an adult.
Yeah, not that scene.
Oh, sorry. I know. I was worried. I had it queued up to a spot because this is the full... like movie, but that's still a great.
I mean, it's a similar scene between the two of them, but it's their first scene together.
Okay,
when he first brings him in, and he's like, "Why do you run?" It's like, "When you're running, are you here or are you somewhere else?" He's like, "No, I'm here. I belong here.
Doing time in my own way.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm doing my time my way. Yeah, it was like that scene. Was like, all right, I have to see this movie now. And maybe listening to that clip will make someone else want to track it down and find it. I really enjoyed it. It's on DVD.
Is it?
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
You can at least find Richard Lawson posted himself to his own YouTube account all the scenes that he's in.
So you can get the first. but I did. I really liked it. What did I? I did rate it on Letterboxd. I think I gave it
and Kevin
three or four stars.
You, 3 or 4 stars? And Kevin?
I'd give it 3.5.
3.5, yeah. All right. Anything else you want to discuss before we move on?
I'll just say we already went, just going forward, like the research, the use of characters casting against each other.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah.
There's a perpetual cue for Sympathy of the Devil that never like fully kicks in.
Yeah.
Like it's got the drums and like the bass line, but it like never comes, but it's exactly like Sympathy for the Devil. So it always, at least for me, like it was always just kind of a propulsive thing that like just never quite got there.
And,
but that worked with it.
In this film or
in this?
I think it's
just instrumental. Because they couldn't get the rights to
But it's, yeah. Right, exactly. It's like Sympathy for the Devil, but it's like a little different toward the end of it.
Yeah. All right. This was a fun movie, and I'm glad this was the only movie that The Keep I had watched a couple years ago. Someone mentioned, oh, it's on Netflix now, streaming, and so I watched it, and it was hard to get through. But this is the only one that I hadn't seen. So
it's not even the hardest one to get through. But we'll get to that in a bit.
All right. Okay. So that was The Jericho Mile from 1979.
All right. I'll just play a clip to introduce the next one.
All right.
I'll tell you a story all about it. Once there was this Captain Morpheus. This 300-pound slob, he couldn't write his name. And he had this crew of 16 or 17 guards and cons and prison groups, you know, crews. They would go into these cells and grab these young guys and bring them up to hydrotherapy in the mental ward, gangbang. And if a guy puts up a struggle, they beat him half to death and he winds up in a funny farm. And anyway, word comes down that I am next. And I do not know what I am supposed to do. I am scared. 11:30, 12, lights come on, and I got this pipe from plumbing. And I whack the first guard in the shins, and I go through a convict and another convict. And anyway, I get to Morpheus, and I whack him across the head twice. Boom. And then they jump all over me, do a bunch of things. I spend 6 months in the hospital ward, but Morpheus, he is also fucked up real good. Cerebral hematoma. They pension him out, and he can't walk straight, and he dies 2 years later, which is a real loss to the planet Earth. Meanwhile, I gotta go back into the mainstream population, and I know the minute I hit the yard, I am a dead man. So I hit the yard, so you know what happens. Nothing. I mean, nothing happens. Because I don't mean nothing to myself. I don't care about me. I don't care about nothing, you know? And then I know from that day that I survived because I achieved that mental attitude.
You would think they would have cut out that grip bumping into the microphone.
I know. But it's really, you know, man is just, it's all about the authenticity. Like, that was the real moment of the scene.
And then the girl saying, sorry. Yeah.
Well, she was.
Yeah.
I can't believe they had a girl for a grip. Wow.
No. And like, in 81, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Affirmative action.
He's a visionary. Yeah.
So that was The Thief.
That was Jimmy Kahn. Thief. Yeah. The Thief.
The Thief.
I think this is, like, in my three-way tie for my favorite.
Yeah, Michael I agree.
Mann movies.
Yeah. Wow. This was the second Michael Mann movie I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the first one you saw?
A Manhunter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you see it, like, in the 80s?
Yeah, yeah, like late 80s. I was really young. My dad was really into letting me watch whatever the hell I wanted to.
So good.
So good. This Thief is really, really well done. This was a script written by, if I'm not mistaken, written by somebody else, and then he kind of took it and made it his own, right?
I think so. I think it was a book. It was a book
called Home Invaders.
Yeah. You know, Confessions of a Cat Burglar, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from what I've read and seen some interviews with James Caan, second to only The Godfather, this is his favorite movie.
This is his favorite performance
of himself.
And he always points to that scene in the diner, which is a masterpiece.
Wait, not Mickey Blue Eyes? Is that like, that's three, right?
Well, it's three.
That's his third favorite. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's a tie for two.
It's a three-way tie for everyone.
Yes, Mickey Blue.
Honeymoon in Vegas.
Yeah.
Mickey Blue Eyes and Thief.
Yeah. And Bottle Rocket. Bottle Rocket.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's not even, that's legitimately good.
Bob's got a beautiful house.
Yeah, so it's Honeymoon in Vegas.
I love Thief. It's so great.
The opening played in silence.
Yep.
Just with him and Jim Belushi in an amazing role, which is surprising enough as it is. His first, actually.
Yep.
Yeah,
his first movie.
It was like the year before his brother died.
Yeah.
And some of the notes I saw that they said that he would show up on set a lot and visit because it filmed in Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, cause a ruckus with his cocaine.
And this continued. He met up with John Bartolino, who he met through, I hope I remember the name right, Adam Richman or something. He helped him with Heat also, but from Chicago Police. And that's how he also met Dennis Farina, who you mentioned plays a thug in this.
Yes, he does.
Willie Nelson playing his friend, his incarcerated friend.
Willie Nelson's awesome.
Dying of cancer, yeah.
Did you say what the movie's about?
No, it's, I mean, it's about a thief. Actually, this is when, okay, so there's not a lot of literature on Michael Mann.
Yeah.
But some guy wrote Michael Mann, The Pocket Essential Guide. And in it, he puts forth a theory about Michael Mann called the Man-Man. That he says is pretty much a template for every Michael Mann character going forward, and it's a pretty good argument. But it's basically okay. So they all have three characteristics. First, they're alone in their dedication to what they do.
Yeah.
They're masters at it. Second, they enter a deal they believe that will give them something they lack, which is usually a dream, like some kind of escape is usually what it is. And they ultimately realize the deal is dangerous because they lose control, and they realize the only thing they have control over is themselves or their inner selves.
Yeah.
And starting with this, that's a pretty good template for Jimmy Kahn. He's an expert thief, but he dreams of a better life with a home, a waitress he meets, Tuesday Weld, who's opposite him in that dinner scene when they're kind of opening up to one another. I tried to get the scene where he's yelling at her about, like, what do you think I do? $150 slacks. but I couldn't find it. That's such a great scene.
Isn't that in the trailer? Or part of it in the trailer?
Is it? I didn't see the trailer. I should have looked at the trailer.
The trailer's good.
Damn. Okay.
It's a good trailer.
But he... And so he ends up losing some money, and he gets involved with the... Like, the boss of like, a group. He becomes employed with them as a thief. So he gets involved with him and just wants to do one job and get out, but obviously it doesn't work that way, and yeah.
Yeah. The soundtrack was performed by Tangerine Dream.
Tangerine Dream.
Yeah.
I think it's the least annoying Tangerine Dream soundtrack I've ever heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it works very well for me.
And he has, like, a great love for crime dramas.
Yes.
And that's, I think, what I love about it, is that it's a different... I mean, for the most part, he stays in this genre for the most of his career.
Again, it's pretty much all he does.
Yeah, but each movie I feel like is an exploration in a different type of crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
different facet of it. But I love James Caan in this, and it's
so good.
Yeah, it's really
He's
good.
He's so badass.
Yeah,
just like that last shootout.
Oh
yeah,
like just like the way he stands there and holds his gun.
Yeah.
Like, if I had seen this movie in the 80s, whenever I played guns, I would have just stood like James Caan all the time.
Yeah.
He looks like a badass in that leather jacket.
It's funny. I like to think that this character, the sequel to this character's life, you know, moving on, would be like Way of the Gun.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because Way of the Gun, he's like a really tough guy, but they never explain like anything about his background. But I'm like, that's what I imagine his background is. Like,
yeah.
Just being a badass thief. And a lot of the tools in that first heist with James Caan were actual tools that he learned how to use. And they were tools given to him by
John Bartolino they consulted with.
That arc welder thing that they actually made James Caan use.
Yeah.
Like where he wanted them to be using this ridiculously hot arc welder to melt that safe. Just the idea of James Caan and Joe Belushi actually melting a safe.
Yeah.
And I guess they had to cut a lot of it out.
Yeah.
To not be like promoting and instructing on how to
rob
a safe.
Yeah. But again, good acting all around. And I give him, sometimes he takes like actors that I would be like, oh, I would never think of casting, like Willie Nelson. Like, I would never think of casting him, or like, you know, John Belushi.
Yeah, it's just one of those roles where you feel like he met Willie Nelson somewhere.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, you have the right look for this.
Yeah.
And then
he's Robert Prosky is Leo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm just like used to him as like the kindly old guy.
Yep.
And he's just like this bad dude.
Yeah. Jenny, did you see this movie?
Yeah, I did.
Was it hard for you to get through?
Yeah, it was. Sorry, well, I wanted to like it. I like James Caan a lot. Like you said, the first scene is like complete silence.
Yeah.
That was hard.
It's like it's all action.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
It's just not my type of movie. But, I mean, the idea of it was interesting. it was just very, it was kind of, they're all kind of
it's
long.
A total, it's a dude slash dad movie.
They are
like, this is a movie I could watch with my dad. Movies.
Yeah, they are.
Is this the right time to have the conversation about how he's kind of a misogynist?
Yeah. No, they're all dude movies.
How he has no idea what to do with women.
No, yeah. I know.
Wait, what are you talking about?
The fact that women are complete objects.
Such a well-rounded character.
And how men just pick them out of a cloud of women.
You mean where he just runs into a bar and he drags her out of the bar and just starts punching people that are like, what the hell is this guy doing?
are you talking about when he slaps around Ashley Judd and Heath?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he's like, you will give him one more chance. Yes, you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really wish the audience could see your De Niro, De Niro shake. Because it's very spot on.
It was a good head tilt. That was a classic De Niro head tilt. But yeah, they just pick them and tell them they're gonna be in love forever, and then that's the love story. That I would say is his largest weakness by a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of hinders any of the other parts of the story he wants to tell that surround that.
I did like some Michael Mann movies. I'll talk about them when they get here. This one,
it's
yes.
Hopeful.
I don't hate all of them.
Which one you like?
Yes, me too.
Really? I'm interested.
I think I do.
Okay. We'll see.
But this, what else I want to say about Thief?
How it was the template for Drive?
Ah.
Yeah, kinda.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was, when he said, "I want to see what the character does next." I was thinking Drive, like that's
like he trains Ryan Gosling.
Yeah,
he's Ryan Gosling's like long lost father. this movie definitely Drive definitely has like a thief slash just thief definitely has. I mean, Drive has definitely like a Michael Mann kind of vibe to it.
This was the really first time I'd rewatched Thief. Since seeing Drive, and like it's the first time I saw Drive, I'm like, oh, it's Thief,
yeah,
but with a car,
yeah.
And rewatching, like, it just so many of the same notes, and like just the same like exact vibes, and like Leo Brosky or not Leo, what's his name,
Robert Brosky,
yeah. And Albert Brooks, so similar, just all the similarities. Like, oh my gosh, I just want to watch them both back to back. And I could have, but then I had to watch another feature. Michael Mann movie.
Sorry. This also, I'm glad you mentioned Robert Prosky. This notice, and this is why I liked the idea of watching all of one person's work at a time. Just because you pick up on, like, Robert Prosky, he has a tendency to cast someone in a movie, use them again, and then never use them again.
Yeah.
He'll use them in his very next movie again, and then goodbye.
Yeah, I'm done with you.
Yeah, because Robert Prosky shows up again in The Keep, which we'll talk about next, and Jamie Foxx is in two of them.
He's in three.
Is he in three?
Yeah. He's in Ali.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people where I was like, oh my god, I just saw him in something.
Wait, what's the third?
Oh yeah, it was the other Michael Mann movie.
He's in Miami Vice.
Oh, of course he's in Miami Vice. Sorry, I forget mostly about Miami Vice.
That burned your theory.
Jamie Foxx being the exception.
Yeah.
It's mostly the character actors, the smaller guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for, like, my three best, like, criminal, like, actors in movies has to be James Caan in this, Steve McQueen in The Getaway, just being, like, badass, and Ryan Gosling in Drive. Like, they're the same character, I feel. Like,
but those three could not have more of a different background.
Oh, yeah,
from which
they
came. Because Jimmy Caan is so good in this,
and
I don't like saying Jimmy Caan for some reason. That sounds weird coming
Jimmy
out of my
Caan.
Mouth. I like saying James Caan. I'm going to stick with James.
Unless he's familiar.
I don't
only
know
his
him.
Friends
yeah.
call him Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm like talking about Bobby. You know, Bobby and I were talking.
Bobby
D. What was I saying? Where the hell were we?
Talking about.
We talked about
brain fart. Three different drivers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's. Jesus. I just had a little bit to drink. Like, actors of that time, like, they came from that.
Yeah.
Like, James Caan came from that. Robert De Niro came from all that.
Yeah.
Like, that's where Scorsese found all those guys and Coppola and everything. And we don't have that anymore.
You know what I was talking about in the previous episode? Where we were talking about male actors in, like, older films. That a lot of those guys, like Lee Marvin and stuff like that, those dudes like saw war. They went to like World War II, or you know, they were in the army, or you know, they were in the armed forces.
Yeah.
So they have like a certain type of like there's a certain type of leading man. Do you know what I mean? Like they're
manly men.
Manly men, yeah.
Where now we've got
like
a triple threat who loves to sing and dance to give Barbara Walters lap dances.
Yes.
Playing Wolverine.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like Hugh Jackman, but he's no Lee Marvin.
Yeah, and I mean, the guy's like really ripped, and he has the characteristics of a man.
He can play it.
Yeah.
But I don't see him
yeah.
as like Telly Savalas renting out the entire suite of top of the Chateau Marmont and then dying in his room, yeah. like coked out on drugs.
Yeah. Even the way they carry themselves on film, like you watch Lee Marvin and like he requires you to watch him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're like a lot of these older leading men, like they just have like the certain thing that you can't put your finger on, but I think it's because they served, you know what I mean?
Well, even more than that, they lived lives yeah. before they acted.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, guys now just have acted their whole life. So yeah. they haven't lived anything, so they can't bring anything to the character other than what's there or what they can imagine.
Yeah.
But if you lived among these people, then you can act like them.
It's funny, like, I've even thought of that myself, like, as personally, like, I'm like, man, I should have, like, served, like, you know, like, done something. Just, I mean, it's different now.
It doesn't have to be war.
No,
you could get a yeah. nice drug habit or, yeah, yeah. like, go in prison somehow.
No, but like, I mean, like, I feel like it's you have, like, an extra bit of grit.
You know I think mean? You like, should start street fighting.
Like, just, like,
you should just start bare-knuckle. Street fighting. Yeah, bare knuckle.
Or just start some street fights.
Yeah.
There you go.
Like, fuck you.
It doesn't have to be organized. Yeah, you just gotta do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. But James Caan, love the chest hair guy. Love the chest hair.
God, he's so hairy.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, it's not just on the chest.
The shoulder hair.
So yeah. It's like, yeah, that's a man. He's got shoulder hair, and he's not ashamed of it. Just there.
And he's like, fuck it. And they're like, James, Jimmy, you want a little razor, a little trim? I'll put a little number on that?
No, it's just going to grow back thick and fuller.
Yeah. But
Jimmy,
yeah.
old wives' tale. No.
So we'll start with Brandon and we'll go around. What would you rate this movie? Letterboxd?
Yeah. 4.5.
Really?
Ooh.
5 stars.
Yeah.
All the way.
Yeah. Kevin?
I'm going to have to go with 4.5.
Really?
I'm one of those guys, I feel like I've never seen a 5.
I've seen many 5s. Thief is a 5 for me. Jenny?
Sorry, 2.5.
It's all right. You don't ever apologize.
You're killing the Letterboxd sponsorship.
I know. I'm sorry. No, I'm
she
using
didn't
it.
Letterboxd. I'm 2.5.
Yeah, I think Letterboxd is a 5+5+5.
I have only seen 1 5, and it's Letterboxd.
It's the Letterboxd website.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Yeah, I love this film. Anything else we want to talk about this?
No, I think we should move on and move as quickly as possible through The Keep, 1983.
Yes.
I don't...
Don't play anything. I don't want to play anything.
Yeah, don't play
you don't want to play part of the argument between nothing. The bad Nazi and the not-so-bad Nazi?
Wait, no. None of it.
So tell us... So that.
Okay, I'll attempt to sketch an outline of whatever yeah. the story is, because I honestly don't really know still.
Just read
this
the synopsis
point.
Of the book.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'd have to look that up.
It's okay,
but
so
in mystical Poland during World War II.
Ignore all. Okay, so the plot of The Keep is supposed to be Nazis find a keep that they hold, and then it's so convoluted. A Nazi commander is,
but he's a very specific Nazi.
He's not the SS.
Right,
he's a soldier. He's not like I hate the Jews.
It's
he's
really
like,
inside baseball, because there's a good Nazi played by Jürgen Prochnow. And a bad Nazi played by Gabriel Byrne. So
Gabriel Byrne.
I really applaud it, you know, trying to make Nazis as sympathetic as possible, being offed one by one in this keep, because they awaken a monster by taking silver crosses off the inside.
And this is the only attempt at a different type of genre for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah.
We know why he aborted this endeavor.
I don't think it was that he got bored of it. I think it was that he was bad at it.
And you know what? What Very you've bad. Seen is only the short version of the film. There's apparently, like, he's always said, and what I read with interviews with him and stuff, that his cut is a really much longer version of it that they just wouldn't release.
Well, A, of course it's longer.
Yeah.
Because Michael Mann likes to make things long.
Well, Jenny, that was Jenny's number one thing that she kept talking about. Like, each time she'd like see a movie, I'm like, hey, what did you think of this movie? She's like, does he make movies under 2 hours?
They're so long.
He's made 2, I think. I think Thief is 2 hours.
2 hours and 2 minutes.
They're all over 2.
Collateral is 2, is probably like 204, maybe.
No, Collateral is 220 something.
Yep, it's 220.
No.
Yeah.
Yep.
That might be a different cut.
Mm-hmm. No.
Cut. It's only one cut.
The one that you just saw is under 2 hours.
Okay.
Last of the Mohicans is under 2 hours, which is weird.
Yeah,
Last of all of his movies, that's the one that feels like it should be longer than 2 hours.
Yeah. And it feels probably the most propulsive out of any of the movies. But anyway, back to The Keep.
Yes.
Because we have to talk about how horrible this thing is.
Oh, my God.
Scott Glenn with his stoned Starman thing.
Yeah.
There's a scene. Okay, if I were, let's talk about the clips I were have played to subject, if I wanted to subject everyone to a horrific nightmare. So there's a dot. So Ian McKellen is this some sort of mystic expert that is taken from one of the concentration camps. He's a Jew and brought to the keep to advise because all these Nazis are being offed one by one from this monster.
Yes.
From Morophilus or something. I can't remember the name of the monster.
I don't remember.
And okay, actually, here's the thing. So Ian McKellen has a website where he tells little anecdotes about making movies. And on The Keep, he said, I had specifically made my first trip to Bucharest and then had a couple lessons from a dialect coach in London. So by the first day of filming, I was ready to sound and feel authentically Romanian. Just before my first take as Dr. Cuza, Michael said, drop the accent, make him more Chicago. Well, if the writer, producer, director makes a request, you jump to it.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense. Because I was like, why does he sound like he's from Chicago?
And his daughter is even worse. She's like from Southern California.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where she goes to this hotel in town to stay because she can't stay in the keep. It's too dangerous. And this is Scott, where she first meets Scott Glenn. And the owner of the hotel, takes her up into this room. Scott Glenn is just staring out the window because it's the only one that has a view of the keep. And the owner, this is the owner of the hotel, is like, hey, who are you? What are you doing? And he's like, this is the only room with the window to the keep. And then the owner looks at her and is like, it's the only one with a view. And she's like, oh, it's fine. I'll stay here.
I guess you should stay here and have sex with this guy.
Yes. Yeah. And so then they look at each other. He's a stone star man with blue eyes, just kind of like waving his head at her, like staring intently. And then there's a scene of them talking on a cliff face, and then they have sex. A very weird sex scene, too. Michael Mann, is he married?
Yes.
Yes. And surprisingly, only one marriage for like, almost like 30 years now.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
He's no James Cameron, where he accumulates ex-wives like PS3.
Well, at
trophies.
Least James Cameron tries to make some layered female characters.
Yeah.
God, that sex scene's weird.
The author of this book said that he didn't know what Michael Mann was doing. He's like, I have no idea what that movie was supposed to be, but it was not.
Yeah. My note was just that goddamn sex scene after Eva and Scott Glenn meet for the first time.
See, okay, rewatching it, I remember why I turned it off the first time. I turned it off as soon as that fucking, I'm sorry, I hate, especially in this movie, I hate Tangerine Dream.
It's really bad in this.
As soon as like you've got the Nazi running in slow motion out of the doorway where the bright white light is shining from behind him, I'm like, fuck this movie.
Oh, it is bad. It is so like, the music is like this weird, I feel like it would be over a scene at an after hours club. Like in some movie,
yes.
Like it's this weird kind of dancey and kind of ambient, like, and it's just them running in slow motion away from the place they plucked the cross off.
And he runs for like a minute.
And that's why his movies are so long.
Because the dude runs for a minute in slow motion. And it just doesn't make any, like it just, all the stuff with Scott Glenn, like it just cuts to him in Greece and you're like, why is he in Greece? What is he? Who knows? I don't know. He's just some dude with glowing eyes and grease.
Yeah.
And the whole movie looks like it was shot through a silk stocking, like a white
stocking. It's got that weird late 70s, like Superman the movie kind of thing.
Yeah, but worse.
Yeah.
So much worse. And just so bad. All around bad. It makes no sense.
And it could be, the thing that bugs me is it could be an interesting idea. Because
the book is supposed to be really good.
Yeah, he likes to make everything into a myth, right? Like, everything is a myth.
Yeah.
Like, he creates a myth of the world and everyone. Like, none of the characters are drawn very deep because it's all kind of a fairy tale.
Yeah.
You're just meant to buy whatever's happening.
Well, and some of these, I wouldn't agree with that.
I know. And we can talk about that, but I stand by, no one's really drawn very well, so we just kind of buy into it. And, like, they like they take this guy from a concentration camp, but like they never show any of the Nazis dying. Mm-hmm. So like we never know that there's any kind of a threat because it's just like one scene, a guy dies, and then the next scene is Jürgen Prochnow like, what the hell are we going to do about all these guys dying?
Well, they show the first two guys die. The guys after
the guys that opened.
Yes. After the slow motion, you see them die.
Yeah.
And then you just hear them talking about people die.
Yeah.
Until Ian McKellen and his daughter right. show up. And then you see those two guys die. But yeah, you don't see very many people die. You see them talking about it.
Yeah. But what if there was like a mass grave of the Nazis that like looked like a mass grave from a concentration camp? And like right away, that is at least playing with the idea of having Nazis and Jews working together to stop a monster. We're all victims of monsters. Some of them are me.
Yeah, I don't even know. I think we should just move on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Jenny, please tell me you didn't waste your time watching this movie.
I couldn't find it, okay, so no. Okay. I didn't see it.
That's good. All right. God bless you.
Although I might have watched it because it was an hour and 40 minutes. I'm sure I had time for that.
Might have enjoyed it.
It's on Amazon.
Sorted them by okay, length.
Amazon Instant. If you do feel like you want to punish someone. Someone you don't like.
Brandon.
It sounds, when you read it, though, it sounds like, what? I have to kind of see this, maybe. Yeah.
Well, it sounds
the poster, interesting.
The poster looks interesting.
Yeah.
The poster looks cool.
And
the
monster Ian McKellen.
Is kind of cool.
Yeah.
He's cool for like a flash. And then they linger on him for too long. It's like, all right, well, that looks stupid now.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea, though. Like, the idea of it, I think, is interesting.
I started reading the book just to be like, all right, well, was this just bad in the first place? And the book is pretty good.
Really?
So far.
It has to be at least better.
Maybe the Keep remake. Mm.
This would be a good one for a remake, I think.
Yeah. All right.
We're further away from the Nazis. Less sensitive.
Yeah. What rating would you give Letterboxd rating?
Oh, it would probably say not found, and I wouldn't enter it.
Okay. All right.
Adam? The lowest possible rating I can get.
So half.
So yeah, half a star.
Okay.
Yep, half a star.
I go half.
Yeah, I'd email them to remove it from the database.
Like, if you not remove this, I will be canceling my free.
Yeah.
All right. What are we going to talk about now?
We're going to talk about Manhunter 1986.
Ooh.
And
that's what I'm talking about.
Play a clip.
My dear Will. If this pilgrim imagines he has a relationship with the moon, he might go outside to look at it. Have you ever seen blood in the moonlight? Well, it appears quite black. If one were nude, it would be better to have privacy for this sort of thing.
That's interesting.
No, it's not. You thought of it before.
I considered it.
You came here to look at me, to get the old scent back again, didn't you?
I want your opinion.
I don't have one right now.
Well, when you have one, I'd like to hear it.
Can I keep this?
I haven't decided yet.
I'll study them. When you get more files, I'd like to see them too. You can call me when I have to call my lawyer. They bring me a telephone. Would you like to leave me your home phone number?
No.
Do you know how you caught me, Will?
Goodbye, Dr. Lecter. You can leave messages for me at the number on the file.
You know how you caught me? The reason you caught me, Will, is you're just alive. You want the scent?
All right. Yeah, I'm excited.
Manhunter.
I will say this. I'll be the guy who says it. I love this the best of out of all the damn Manhunter movies.
Okay, well, I'm going to be the opposite and say I hated this movie.
Really?
Whoa.
Really?
It's so...
Should have come with a record scratch.
So unbearably 80s. I'm sorry. If I had seen it in the 80s, maybe I would have liked it. But since I saw it this year, I was like, fuck this movie.
This is the first Michael Mann movie I saw.
I think it's the first one I saw too.
Okay, so let's get a little vote around the table.
Okay, so wait. In case anyone doesn't know, it's based on Red Dragon by Thomas Harris.
Yeah.
The first appearance of Hannibal Lecter. It was remade by Brett Ratner.
That was hard to say.
Yeah, in like 2002 or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I don't want to look it up.
I don't want to look it up either. But it's like the Psycho remake. It's almost shot for shot.
Yeah.
With no real style or anything interesting about it.
You know, just better cast and actors.
Doesn't look like
it's the '80s.
Well, it was the '80s.
And they didn't change the ending.
It could not have been made in the future.
They didn't change the ending and make it a retarded action movie ending.
In Red Dragon?
Yeah.
Did they keep... I don't remember Red Dragon. Did they keep the original book's ending, which is like he...
The fire, right?
Yeah, he burns down his house,
right?
That's
a good ending.
Yeah, that's a good ending.
I agree.
Like this one, which is dumb.
That's,
no.
that's that's what such I agree a dumb with. Ending. I like Red Dragon's like, ending let's better than this.
Tack
ending.
The ending of a Lethal Weapon movie onto the end of
Red what? Dragon. He's just such running out the window.
Such a shitty,
and
stupid
he
ending.
He can see him. I'll agree. He doesn't even shoot. He just like hits it. Like what?
I'll agree that I also no, don't like good. It when he just jumps through the window for some reason. Okay. I don't like that either. But that does not detract from it being the best version of any Hannibal Lecter thing.
No.
Okay. Because let's talk about Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. Let's talk about Hannibal Lecter.
L-E-C-K. He's in this one
for like 2 minutes.
So same as Red Dragon. He's in the same amount in Red Dragon. No, they add extra stuff in Red Dragon because
Silence
it's
of the
Anthony
Lambs
Hopkins.
Is the best Hannibal Lecter movie. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Here, it's a taste thing. I like the more academic, dry Brian Cox performance than I do the like very specifically evil, scene chewy.
Yeah.
Anthony Hopkins one.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm with you there.
I like the White Room as opposed to the Dark Dungeon.
Yeah.
No, I hate this.
I like how they shot it at the. Oh God, where is it shot? Because
I hate how bright it is.
It's the High Museum of Art in Atlanta.
It is. Like I that, know. I
yeah,
love
yeah.
that.
Oh, that's right. You guys. Are, yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
and I've been there all the time.
It looks amazing as a
that
place where you would hold
really good,
like
actually.
An intense prisoner. Yeah.
That.
Like the white of everything. Yeah. I think it really works against.
I think this movie looks terrible.
Okay. Well, let's talk about
the scene at the beginning of the bedroom where it's just blue.
Yeah, that looks awful.
Oh, my God.
The interesting thing is it's the same cinematographer for both films.
Yep. Dante?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the second one wasn't made in the 80s.
For everything except Ali, right? Am I correct on that? Dante Spinotti?
No. Collateral is two. Dante and somebody else.
The same cinematographer as Michael Mann's other movies or the same cinematographer
as Red Dragon?
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, but he did The Keep also, right?
I don't know about that. I don't know if Dante did The Keep.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Because it looks about the same.
Manhunter's
but
all right, beautiful.
All right, let's talk about Manhunter. Well, I loved it, so let's talk about it. first of all, there are scenes when they're talking through the cell, Hannibal Lecter is. And I've seen this done before in other like prison movies and stuff like that where they just shoot it all willy-nilly. And the bars change from the coverage. So from the coverage of a Will to Hannibal, if somebody else had shot it in other movies I've seen, the bars don't line up. So when they switch like angles, the coverage, sorry, it's kind of jarring to your eye.
Because one's coming from like the right of one character, yes, left of another, yes, the camera position.
Well, what he did in this movie, Manhunter, is he made sure that when the shot turned around to the coverage of like, so we're now looking at Hannibal Lecter, the bars match up exactly. So to the eye, it's something interesting that I had never noticed until like I read up on it. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And I had to rewatch. And then I tried to find movies where there's like a prison cell. And it is really jarring to the eye. And it does. And because it's so smooth, it lets the scene build up with the characters.
Which is the dialogue.
Yeah.
With William Peterson's kind of sad.
Yeah. And the thing that Red Dragon doesn't have that this has and that, is
William Peterson.
William Peterson. Also, the fact like
I don't like him in this movie.
Oh, he's great in this movie.
Wrong answer.
I liked him in this. I don't.
He's not as good as in
Red Dragon. Doesn't have that.
Even my girlfriend was like, "Oh, that's why like he's a thing."
Yeah,
because he's good looking in this.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And also just the fact that like there's a thing with his like he's really torn in this because of his family. You know what I mean? He's really torn to go do this thing.
Yeah.
Where in Red Dragon, it's like, I'll go.
I kind of felt opposite. Really? I felt like I kind of cared more. I didn't really feel the whole thing with his family as much in this one as I did in Red Dragon. But I don't know. Well, also, they included the family more in Red Dragon than this one, too. Like, the whole final couple scenes where that whole thing in Red Dragon, he's at their beach house.
Would you feel differently if you had seen this movie before?
See, okay, that's my thing, because I liked Manhunter a lot, but I would have liked it more if it was more suspenseful, and I knew everything that was going to happen from Red Dragon, I already knew. So I think that, like, kept it from being as good to me, so.
If we can see eye to eye on one thing, we have to agree on how great Tom Noonan is.
Yes. He's a way better
as Dollar Hyde.
Yeah.
He is so much creepier
and
weirder.
Yeah.
When he comes out with the pantyhose on the upper part of his face.
Yeah.
Like that is scary.
Yeah.
That is legitimately scary. Oh, Adam.
Well, Raph Fiennes, is that how you say his name?
Face.
Raph
Fiennes. He's just Rafe not Fiennes. Very fine, sorry. He's just not very I just East Rafe Fiennes. It doesn't make any sense. His name is Ralph. It's not Rafe.
East Refunds.
Anyways, him. he's not very spooky or scary. Like, no. He's like a good looking guy that you're like, why does anyone feel
like
nervous around him? Yeah.
Which Tom Noonan is scary in general.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
That's neither here nor there for me.
Well, but I would say that works for this because that's exactly why he was chosen.
He
looks creepy.
I want to invite Tom Noonan.
But again, we're coming to the part, like, I already knew everything that's going to happen except for the retarded ending. And so, like, I mean, other than Tom Noonan just being creepy because he's Tom Noonan.
Oh, and Philip Seymour Hoffman is in the
way
line.
Better than the fucking. Yeah. I hate the guy in this movie.
It's Stephen Lang. What are you talking about? He's great.
Terrible.
Stephen Lang?
So bad.
I like Philip Seymour Hoffman better.
I would say the Red Dragon, it's weird because I would bet, I'm going to put forth that if he had not made Manhunter and Michael Mann was going to make Manhunter, it would have been Red Dragon.
Yeah.
By the time Michael Mann got to that point, like 2002, around that time, he stopped casting those interesting people in main roles.
Yeah.
He started casting Jamie Foxx as a broken down cab driver.
Yeah.
And people like that who we're supposed to believe are like down and out, but they're beautiful people
that are
Hollywood actors.
No.
I think Red Dragon would have been what he made at that time.
The casting is. We'll get to that. And we'll address that.
Okay.
We'll get that. But Manhunter, I love the cinematography. I love the blue. I love that. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
I love that he's obsessed with chromatic, like, saturation.
Yeah.
I love that about his movies. Like, he constantly is exploring, like, cinematography. Yeah, now he's moved to digital, and I understand there's a little hate on that.
Oh, and we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that. But in these early years, and in each film, the exploration of cinematography is amazing. And this kind of is where he was kind of like finding his style and loving the blue.
Yeah.
Loving the blue filters. But I love everybody in this. And I think Brian Cox is probably the best Hannibal. I will say that. I like the subdued Hannibal.
Besides maybe Mads Mikkelsen.
I'd go with that. I do love that show.
It's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like,
kid from Hannibal Rising.
Oh, Jesus.
Who's the guy?
Red Dragon is a part of all that. That alone makes it.
Who's playing Will in the show, in the NBC
Hugh
show?
Hugh Dancy.
Hugh Dancy is channeling William Peterson.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All the way.
Yeah. So, anything else you guys want to talk about this? We're
just going to gush on it. So.
We're part in the middle here, right? Like, half of us like it, half of us don't.
No,
Kevin, where do you come in? You like it.
Yeah, I liked it. I feel like I would have liked it more and rated it more if I'd seen it before Red Dragon.
Yeah.
If I had seen it in the 80s, I might have.
I mean, I'll tell you the other actors considered for Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
John Lithgow.
Yep.
Mandy Patinkin, who I would have liked to see.
Both of those.
William Friedkin, and the director.
Really?
Yeah.
That would have been interesting.
And Brian Dennehy, but Brian Dennehy recommended Brian Cox.
Oh.
To Michael Mann.
He's like, go with another Brian.
Yeah, you should go with
this guy. I thought Brian Cox did a really good job.
Yeah. He based it on Peter Manuel, who is a Scottish serial killer, probably from his childhood.
I also don't hate on Red Dragon as much as either of you guys do either.
I don't hate on it.
I just find it pointless.
Yeah. like my thing is that they did that already in this movie.
No,
like,
why I understand.
It's very pointless because
But if you done. Hadn't seen it, then I think it was like, I like Red Dragon still.
I think they're both
totally different movies, even though they're the same story.
Yeah.
I like Red Dragon.
Yeah, I like
Me too.
I like them both.
And I knew somebody that worked on that movie, on Red Dragon, and they said that Dante did most of the directing on that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't like Brett Ratner at all.
Yeah.
So that's comforting. All
right.
But I like Red Dragon.
So let's start from the top. Brandon, Letterboxd rating.
4.75.
Wow. All
right. It's very specific.
So I said I hate
it. It might be my favorite Michael Mann movie.
Really?
You can give it a 5. It's a lot.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll give it a 5.
Oh,
five.
Man.
Letterboxd 5.
Did it.
Okay.
So even though I said I hated it, I gave it a 2.5 still. But yeah, 2.5.
Okay.
3.
All right. You're right in the middle.
Yeah, I feel like that hurts even more than the 2.5.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, I'm indifferent. I'm
very quiet about this movie.
I like it more, but not that much. I would never watch it again. But
How do you feel about it?
I watched it again for this podcast.
How did you feel about it compared to Red Dragon?
I like Red Dragon more.
You guys are outnumbered.
Boom.
All right.
But I will say that this is the movie where he starts his infatuation with the ocean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody lives by the ocean from here on out. Yeah.
Yeah. I would give it 4.5 stars. And Jenny?
I'm going to go 3. Yeah. As well.
All right. Goddamn 80s and those goddamn shorts and fucking.
Oh, the shorts are the best. The shorts are
so short. That's true.
Yes. And like, they I like
Stephen Lang, but he was like a.
He's hairy too. What's his face?
Stephen Lang?
No. William Pearson is hairy too.
Yeah.
He's a hairy guy. He likes hairy guys.
And what, Kim Greist? Is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kim Greist is the wife. And like they, I don't know. I just.
She's no Tuesday Weld.
She's no too well. Isn't Mary Louise Parker the wife in Red Dragon? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Like they had, like they're maybe just the blue, but their whole relationship was just really cold, and like they're not. There was no connection between the two of them at all to me.
Well, yeah, it's Michael Mann.
That's Michael Mann. Yeah, he doesn't know how to do like that.
Yeah. Emotion.
That's kind of how I felt too. Yeah. I was like, just there's no
really weird, and like that weird sex scene in the corner of the glass room. Like, what's happening?
Yeah. I dug that. I
really, maybe like if I'd seen it in like the 80s or like the early 90s, I would have been okay. But I just was never interested, and I will never watch it again.
All right. I own it, so I will definitely be rewatching it again.
Do you have it on Blu-ray? I'll borrow it.
I don't have it on Blu-ray. I only have it on DVD.
We'll watch it together and not invite anyone.
Yeah.
Good.
We'll watch Red Dragon.
Exactly. And Silence of the Lambs.
Brandon, we'll wear really short shorts, all right?
Yes. Blue.
Yeah. All right. So what are we going to talk about next?
Next is 19... I don't have a clip to do this, but 1992's Last of the Mohicans.
Wait, 1989. We skipped
his masterwork.
Well, I'm... Okay. We're going to talk about that
after
with the next thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
It's...
I like that.
I think it's important. Just as we skipped another very important milestone in his career to talk about it when that one came about.
Yeah. All right. I like that.
Vague, obfuscate. Mystery. Yeah.
So let's talk about. Let's go to 1992.
1992, Last of the Mohicans.
Yes.
I don't have a clip because most of them online.
I will find you.
Yeah. Are all in.
That was good.
Are all in Native American. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Just play the score. Just the score.
Yeah, just the score, which has been reused everywhere, and I didn't realize it was reused in Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I totally spaced that.
And those NFL commercials.
The one that he specifically directed.
Yeah.
He reused his own score.
Yeah. So
great score.
Give us a synopsis of it. 1992, Last of the Mohicans.
I cannot remember their tribe. Three.
The Mohicans.
The Mohicans.
I don't think that's it.
I think there's the Mohicans.
There's the Hurons. And Mohawks. There's the Mohawks.
Maybe someone else should take the mantle on the Last of the Mohicans synopsis. No, three Mohicans. It's during the French and Indian War, the 10 years war, and
7 years war.
7 years war. And I don't know my history,
We're making you synopsize this, and you just saw it for the first time.
Exactly. Part of it was I did not like the first hour as much as I did. I wasn't as with it with the first hour.
Well, even before we get to the synopsis, I've seen this movie so many times, and I'm always confused about what's happening.
Yeah, it's a little bit, because unless you know your history, I mean, you know, it was the 7 years war as opposed to the 10 years war, but it was, so they, it's three of them, and they are friendly with colonists, British, you know, of Britain colonists, but are not of Britain, this weird transitional period of America. And the French and British are fighting with various tribes aiding both of them, various Native American tribes. And the Mohicans, the three last of them, run into a party carrying like the daughter of a general. Two daughters.
They cut out Jodie and Maya a lot, but there are two of them.
Yeah, there are two of them. And they bring them to safety to the fort after an attack by Wes Studi and his band of evil Indians.
Yeah. The Hurons.
Wes Studi keeps reappearing in some of Mann's films.
Yeah.
You know who else?
He reappears in his next one, and then he doesn't reappear in anything else after
Ooh,
this.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, someone else who is in multiple, more than two, is, what's his name? Jack from MacGyver.
Jack?
hold on, let me find him.
So, this movie, I really enjoy, especially once
it's
you
great.
Get to, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie are just, like, badass.
I would say ever, so they get to the fort, and then there's an attack on the fort, there's an amicable amicable surrender and the British and the French, that's the scene I wanted the most. That scene between the French general and the British general,
yeah,
like surrendering and like the offer, like, yeah, you can take your weapons and leave and just go back to Britain. That's fine. It's just so formal and
like the way the French general bows,
yes,
the, like his very, very deep bow, and he waves his hat around.
French, yeah,
yeah, it's very, it's like he's gonna slap his and what the fuck in your general direction.
He's all, good day, sir. I said good day.
And Bruce McGill is the guy I was talking about. Bruce
yes.
McGill.
Yes, has been yes. In, yeah. He's in a lot of stuff. Yeah, he's in yeah. a lot of man stuff. Yeah. But and then the West Studi does not want to see them leave. Greybeard, yeah. the British general, because they slaughtered, you know, their village or whatever.
Yeah.
And this is the one where I guess I most believe the relationship between Daniel Day-Lewis and Madeline Stowe.
Yeah.
Probably because Daniel Day-Lewis is such a great actor. Yeah, I believe what he's feeling. Because
it doesn't really make any sense.
No, it doesn't make sense at all. Again, he kind of just picks her.
Like, I can't really explain why I love... why I guess because it looks really cool and it sounds really cool, yes, and Daniel Day-Lewis is in it. And that's why I love this movie. But like, if you just sit back and you think about it from like a story point of view, you're really confused a lot of the time. Even like, I've seen it so... like, I remember watching it back in high school. I've seen this movie so many times, and I love it, but I don't know... like, I can't be like, oh, yeah, this is why this is great. I can't be like, hey, let's sit down. I'm going to make this stranger watch Last of the Mohicans. I'm like, no, it's a private alone time thing.
Well, also...
because I don't have to explain myself.
If I want to show somebody, like, convince somebody to watch, and they're like, nah, this looks kind of slow, just show them, like, the last battle, like, the last little bit, the last 20 minutes of the movie. And
like, his speech with Sockham, the chief,
yeah,
which is... reminds me a lot of the outlaw Josie Wales.
Yeah.
The amazing
yeah.
scene between him and Thundering Foot. What's his name?
The Native American?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That a bit like, you know, my, and you'll know my word is bond. Like, it's all the same language.
Yeah, yeah.
So that scene's really good. But yeah, the it's, again, it's just pretty white lady. We together forever now.
I found an interview with Michael Mann about the making of this, and him talking about how they couldn't find Daniel Day-Lewis, like, when it got close to the production date. And it's because he's like, yeah, I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks. I'm going to just live off the land. So, see you guys later. God, and they so couldn't awesome. Track... he had no phone. He had nothing. He was just living off the land, fishing, hunting, and...
his own shoes.
Making his own shoes.
Supposedly, after, like, a day and a half, he was a crack shot with the .22. With powder load
with the flintlock, is that what
yeah
and this is a perfect match, I think, because Michael Mann insane research with Daniel Day-Lewis insane like dedication to I'm gonna get this right. If you watch him loading the gun and one of the like the last 10 minutes, he's fucking fast.
Well, yeah. He's loading the gun while he's running.
Yeah
and just the way he carries it. It's like, you know, he just carried that thing everywhere with him.
I remember I was reading, because I was coming to that point where I was realizing where I was conflicted. I was like, why do I love this movie so much when, like, it's not, like, the clearest movie? And so I was reading, like, negative reviews of it, and someone was complaining about, like, the inability to fire two flintlocks at the same time. I'm like, fuck you, Daniel Day-Lewis did it. I saw it happen. Like, I don't care if you say it's impossible. He did it.
He literally did it.
On camera.
In one take.
In one take.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was at least powder blanks.
Yeah,
I mean, they were loaded.
So I there's nothing to say. But I love this movie.
And yeah, it's great. It is.
It's a little flawed, but it's great. I mean, I still love it.
It's definitely the most successful of him venturing outside of male crime films.
Yeah.
The one of two, The Keep and this.
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah.
Even that one, I would say, is a male crime movie.
Yeah, you know, I know where you're going with. I love this. So should we go with our ratings? Is there anything else we want to talk about?
When I was a kid, I told my mom I wanted Chingachgook's weapon.
Oh.
You're a badass, dude. You're like, for Christmas, I don't want a BB gun.
Did you get it?
No.
Oh.
Now it's sad.
She got you a Batliff instead?
Yeah.
All right. So do you want to do the ratings? Want to go there, or you want anything else we need to talk about?
You go first this time.
I'll go first. All right. I give it 5. Letterboxd, 5 stars. I love this.
I'd say 4.
Yeah. Adam?
I give it 5.
Yeah.
I can't control myself. It's just something about Daniel Day-Lewis with the long hair running through the woods, firing flintlocks.
It's a beautiful, beautiful sight.
Yeah.
I give it a 5.
Yeah. And again, so so far there's 1, 2, 3, So I'm going to go back to The Thief real quick and see who did the cinematography, but this was Dante as well. Dante, yeah. How do you pronounce the last name?
Dante did Thief too.
Did he?
No, I think Dante started with Manhunter.
Did he?
Because I looked to see if he did The Keep, yeah. And I didn't see anything
so before Thief, Manhunter. The Thief's cinematographer was Donald Thorin. So.
Okay.
And then he went back to Dante for this. So Manhunter and The Last of the Mohicans, Dante. So.
I
Jenny
would
what how many stars it, throw it out
can
there.
Can I do one too?
Throw it out there.
I'm gonna go 4. I did like this one is one of my top ones. There's like a few that I like a lot.
It's because of Madeline Stowe.
Yeah, she's all right.
She's tough and she shoots that dude.
I think it has a lot to do with just Daniel Day-Lewis's relationships in general, like him with his adopted dad and brother. Like that's like a really tight relationship. Him and her and Madeline were, yeah, I guess that's a really good whatever for Michael Mann. Great, congratulations. But
well, she's a strong woman who stands up for herself and says no to that other dude.
That's true. Her, his brother and her sister's relationship. Yeah, doesn't make a little any bit sense more. To me though. I mean, it
makes
enough.
More sense in a tragic way.
It was enough, yeah. Like,
but when did they like they?
The, well, you the can't first ask that about either. Them
don't you remember yeah. that really creepy stare that they cut to of him just staring off into nowhere? And you're like, is he staring at her? I mean, I think he's trying to say that he's just sitting there staring at them.
Well, and I remember a weird, obvious where they like slowed it down optically, where they're hugging. I'm like, all right, well, that clearly wasn't as long a hug as it was supposed to be. They slowed that down, but I get what they're going for. But yeah, it was just such a like. I remember the first time I saw that movie. Well, the first time I saw the end of the movie was before I even saw the whole movie. So I knew how the movie ended before I saw it. I was like, oh, shit. They must really be in love. And then I saw the rest of the movie. I'm like,
yeah.
That's
no,
the first
I know.
Time I saw that they were.
Well, that and says something else saying that Michael Mann was like, she's got to kill herself.
Yeah, she can't live without him. She's a woman with no man.
Yeah, exactly. She can't go without him.
Yeah.
She's got to die.
And why? Okay, the last question I have is: they're in the cave, like they've saved Madeline Stowe and her sister behind the waterfall from Wes Studi and his band of evil Indians, and yeah. We'll call them Injuns. And
no,
well, because they're the bad ones. There's good ones and bad ones. Michael Mann.
I don't think it's ever okay to say
like
Indian.
The Nazis.
I don't think
like
it's ever okay. To
like
say
the Nazis. I know. I'm just saying it because Michael Mann, like he had the bad Nazis and the good Nazis that we're sympathizing with. But
so
here,
the
he's
bad
like,
Indians and the good Indians.
Yeah, there he makes a duality of them. Like here are the good ones that are helping everybody, and here are the evil savage ones. Like they are way more savage Indians than the other guys.
Yeah.
Like their characters and performances, they are way more like the stereotypical Indian. That's why I say that.
Yeah, but I mean, they weren't.
Daniel Day-Lewis is the pinnacle of the Mohicans, and he is well-spoken and learned in English. But he's the representative of them. Except the other guys who are the representative of like the skill of them.
I just know because Russell Means, the guy who plays what's his name,
who's awesome,
Chingachgook.
He's like a Native American representative in general. And I remember like he was just like my history teacher before he showed us the movies. Like Russell Means is a badass, basically.
Yeah.
It's like he would make sure that you do not misrepresent any Native American peoples at all.
Yeah, but you can't argue with the fact that Wes Studi and his band are the savage ones.
They are the savage ones, but they're still like they're
and
not
that's
like
that's what makes them evil.
They're not like I don't know. I feel like savage. There's a
there's still good ones
there's
in
a
their
connotation.
Indian group.
Sure.
Tribe, I mean.
There's a,
sure. But they're the villains.
Some good ones.
They are the villains.
They're the villains and they're more.
No, yeah.
They're just portrayed more like animalistic. They're the ones like yelling more,
more
and all
can
that
Can we just
kind
say ferocious
stuff.
Instead of savage?
Why? What's wrong with that?
I'm only saying
savage.
Savage
is like a. It's,
oh, it's racist.
Yeah, it's like a negative connotation.
Why is it racist, though? I'm just curious.
I would agree with you, but that's exactly why I'm saying it. Because that's how they're portrayed in the movie, is like that kind of Indian portrayal in a thing. Which is what that perception led to. That's what that stereotype led to.
I don't think it's that bad. It's not like it's a John Ford movie where they're like shooting Indians willy-nilly.
No, it's not. But the like Mohican
Russell,
the Mohican you
what's
talk
his name?
To
Russell
most.
Studi is like, I don't know. There's a motivation for his savage, like his savagery or his ferociousness. He wants revenge.
They're out for vengeance. Yeah.
I don't know.
But that's also like a stereotypical.
And then like the rest
Indian
of the dudes,
story.
They stop once they kill him. They're like, oh yeah, our bad.
Yes. That was a moment of like honor.
Yeah.
You know, honor and war.
I don't know.
I say savage
no
specifically
just
because
don't say
it's racist. I said those specifically because they're racist, specifically because like, I still think that's kind of how they're portrayed in the movie, is that classic that classic, you know, kind of slightly racist Indian in a Hollywood movie.
I mean, I'm not.
It's better.
I'm not a Native American, it's so I can't better. Really say.
Yes, it's a lot better than a John Ford movie for sure. But why did going but back
those
to the cave?
Fucking French.
Why did they? Oh, we can all agree they're the worst, except for baguettes.
baguettes are delicious.
But they're like, we have to go. You'll be safe. We have to leave, and they just leave them to be captured.
Yeah,
because all of their powder is wet. Because
mm-hmm.
of the
waterfall.
The waterfall.
Well, how did they even know to go underneath the waterfall to find them? That's what I want to know. How did they even know to go
they know
there?
The land.
They're trackers.
GPS.
GPS.
I just don't get
where iPhone. Are they going to get more power?
Jenny, their iPhone.
Out of anywhere, they're like, yeah, they're underneath this waterfall right here, this
well,
cave.
They figured they might as well check there.
It was the first place they checked.
They're thorough. You
but are
know
they,
that.
Are they
editing.
Going?
They could have checked somewhere okay. else first.
Are they going to get more powder? Because
yeah,
if not,
to get more powder.
Oh, where are they going to get more powder from?
From all the dead dudes back in the valley where they
yeah,
just came from.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm with it.
That's the least nonsensical part. Is that a triple negative?
I will.
Yeah. The least nonsensical part of that movie to me is like, I understand why they leave her.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they found that.
So this is a movie, a film that we all agree that is great, right? This is
yes.
the first one that we've all agreed on.
We all love it.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Even though it doesn't entirely make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still,
it's
I
a little
like
racist.
I need to read the book.
There's some good stuff.
Yeah. It's good. It's well done.
I don't know. I've heard the book is really hard to get into.
Yeah.
Maybe I just need to watch the because it's like in the credits they specifically make a point to say it's based on the book and the 1920 movie. So
yeah.
we just watched the 1920.
The
movie.
1936 original
yeah.
screenplay is
yeah.
what the credits say.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
But it's been made like a dozen times
yes.
here and internationally.
Yeah.
It's been adapted.
So universally, we like
all
it.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel Day-Lewis. I feel like he's the.
So good.
He brings everyone together.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. He's a glue beneath her wings.
So you can't fly.
When I was working at the Arclight, we would play scores from movies, and I forget what movie he was there for. I think it was There Will Be Blood. He was doing a Q&A, and he's just standing in the lobby, and all of a sudden the score for this comes on, and I'm just standing there like, yes, this is the perfect moment.
Oh,
I
my God.
This.
You're like, Daniel, Daniel!
Drop right? to your knees.
I found you! All right, so we got that. What are we going to talk about next?
Okay, now
we're
going to backtrack a little bit.
Yeah.
One of our grips.
Yeah.
up the boom,
my
up
bad.
The boom. Okay, now we're going to backtrack a little bit. Well, first,
I just had a really big margarita, okay?
We did actually skip an episode of Crime Story he directed,
yeah.
Which was a TV series that he produced in 1987, but no one here saw it. So.
And we skipped over Miami Vice.
Well, we're going to come back to that.
yeah.
Yes, just when, like we skipped over... Yes. 1989's L.A. Takedown, which leads into 1995's Heat.
Yes.
Because they are the same script, although L.A. Takedown was shortened and terrible.
Yeah.
yes.
And then you have Heat. So I have a clip.
Please tell me you have a clip from L.A. Takedown.
Well, yeah. Okay, so if anyone's seen, this, it's short, but if...
okay, so hold on. By the way. You can watch L.A. Takedown in its entirety on YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
You can suffer through it. There are some actually pretty
it's
great
tough.
Character actors in it that are not giving
Xavier,
the best
Xavier, what's his name, who's in Heat?
Xander Berkeley.
Xander Berkeley, yeah.
Xander?
Yeah.
Okay. He plays Ralph in Heat, and he plays one of the...
Wangro.
Yeah.
He's
he plays
the...
Wangro
yeah. yeah.
And the guy from Walking Dead.
Who
Michael Rooker?
Michael Rooker?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
yeah
he's in it, too, yeah.
yeah.
I did not make
Daniel
it all the
Baldwin.
Way through.
Daniel Baldwin's in this one.
Yes.
Oh,
okay, so...
That Baldwin.
So, anyway...
You have a clip.
I have a clip that is... Okay, so there's in Heat. If we just get into it, I'm sure everyone kind of knows Heat at least a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a sprawling, epic Los Angeles crime drama that is really great.
Yes.
But there's the famous scene between Robert De Niro and Al Pacino at the diner when the criminal and the cop have a face-to-face meeting. And there's a lot of that scene that is from the original script that L.A. Takedown was taken from.
Yeah.
But just to give you an idea of the differences in quality of the exchange, it's just a short side-by-side of the first clip you'll hear is the guys in L.A. Takedown, and then it'll switch to Heat. You'll hear De Niro's voice.
Here we go.
I chased down Cruz. The guys are just looking to go back.
You must have worked some pretty bad off Cruz.
I worked all kinds.
You see me doing thrill-seeker liquor store holdups with a Born to Lose tattoo on my chest?
You see me doing thrill-seeker liquor store holdups with a Born to Lose tattoo on my chest?
No, I do not.
Right. I am never going back.
Yeah. So yeah, it's short, but that gives you a bit of an idea.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, a lot of the scenes are
Let's not
literally
be too hard on it.
But Jericho Mile was a TV movie.
Yeah. Well made, yeah. Fair point.
Yeah, and it's good.
Yeah.
So
V the miniseries
is good.
Duel was originally a TV movie.
Okay. Yes.
So Ollie Takedown and
Merlin the miniseries was a TV movie.
Yeah, yeah. So he said a bunch of times that it was kind of really good that he got a chance to do this TV movie because he was able to add things to the script that only enhanced it.
Yeah, it's a rough draft.
Yeah.
And no one really gets to do that in making a movie, which is amazing.
Yeah. So to me, Heat, now let's just move on to Heat. Let's not ever talk about LA Takedown.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it? We're just gone?
Oh. Yeah. I didn't. Okay, who finished LA Takedown?
I did.
I would skip parts.
I watched the whole thing.
I just couldn't handle it.
Were you drinking? Please tell me you were drinking while watching it.
Maybe.
Probably.
Most likely.
I don't think I was.
Oh.
That's weird.
Wow.
That's
really weird. I don't know how you did it.
I mean, well, because I've been like. I've been doing this cross train thing, so I haven't been able to drink as much.
Oh, congratulations!
And like cut down on the liquor.
You're a quitter. I don't like you anymore.
No, I still drink. I just not as much.
No, I don't like that.
You saw me just chug a ginormous margarita.
I didn't see you put tequila in it.
It was up to here in tequila, and then I did a floater tequila on top.
Okay.
So for the listener, he did it up to here with tequila on the glass. I'm holding the glass. That and was up to there with mixer.
All right. So
I rest my case.
So Heat. Let's go into Heat.
Yes.
Heat,
let's go into Heat.
So everyone gave LA Takedown half a star.
No stars.
Okay.
I gave it half because that's the lowest.
Removed from database.
Because I finished it all the way. Yeah. It is weird that it was in the database. Yeah. It's really weird. I was surprised that it's on Letterboxd.
It is impressive how many movies Letterboxd has in their database, isn't it?
I am very impressed.
Thousands.
Yeah. Like all of them.
Yeah.
Every movie.
Not sponsored yet by Letterboxd.
All right. Heat, I will say, if you go to our profile, and you could find all our Letterboxd ratings and stuff, if you go to our website at thefilmpodcast.com, you'll see the gang, they'll say.
Yeah.
Do you have mine on there, too?
Yeah, your Letterboxd link, too. Yeah.
Except mine. I haven't emailed it to you yet.
No, you haven't, you bastard. All right. So I gave it half. That's the lowest rating you can get for LA Takedown. So, but Heat, if you go to my Letterboxd, it shows you. For those who don't know what Letterboxd is, it's a social media site for film lovers. It's like Facebook without all the fucking bullshit about coconut water and, you know, all that shit.
CrossFit.
But that's good for you.
Yeah. And you just get movie stuff. You rate it. You rate them. You review them. You have friends. You follow friends. And in your profile, it says your top five, like four films. And one of mine is fucking Heat. Because I love that fucking movie.
And I will say that I used to really not like Heat at all.
What? Wow. I'm glad I didn't know you back then because I would have punched you in the face. Wow. With glasses
now
on.
Now you know how I feel when Adam hated Manhunter.
I'm sorry, but Heat's good.
Heat is good. Unlike I came around. But it took me, I'll be honest, it took me getting into Michael Mann's vibe to fully appreciate Heat. Because
this guy.
Right. Well, you like a lot of stillness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's very low emotional depth. There's like an artifice of emotion.
What? I think this is like so deep. What are you talking about?
It's deep in a super masculine.
I disagree with that completely.
Okay.
I think it's funny. Out of all the films of his, I feel. Dude, I cried at the end of this movie.
Whoa.
I'm not going to lie. I fucking cried at the end of this movie. And I won't bullshit you. Every time I've seen it in theaters, like when they show a cut of it, like at the New Beverly or like ArcLight, when I go rewatch it, I fucking cry at the end each fucking time.
I love the relationship between Al Pacino and Robert De Niro.
I mean, that's actually probably the best romance he's ever written.
Yes, I agree. That is the best romance. It is a total bromance, and it is that part is amazing. Yes.
I just remember all of, like, they're making a huge deal about them together, De Niro and Pacino together. I remember all the Entertainment Tonight specials about the scene where they're in the diner together.
But then they made a better movie called Righteous Kill. Brandon, give us a synopsis of Heat for people who haven't seen Heat.
Okay, so for people who haven't seen Heat, it's a LA crime drama about a group of thieves who they're led by Robert De Niro with Danny Trejo, Val Kilmer, Who is the one I always mix up with Vincent D'Onofrio?
Oh, you're thinking of sorry, you're thinking of the guy who does drugs. The guy from
Tom Sizemore. Friar.
Tom Sizemore. The Tom guy Sizemore. From Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
So tell us the synopsis. What are you guys laughing about?
I'm sorry. My IMDb app was glitching, and over Al Pacino's name, they were showing the picture of John Voight.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It was really weird.
You should take a picture of it.
I should have, but I didn't think to do it.
John Voight's hair is amazing in this, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay, yes. So. Yeah.
Very long. Okay, so anyway, it's about the movie starts off with them robbing an armored car, just like LA Takedown, and Al Pacino is the one investigating the robbery. That sparks the romance because of how good they are with Robert De Niro. But one of them fucks up and they kill one of the guards, and they end up killing several of them because one of them had died or one drew a gun or whatever. And that one, by now you guys can tell I'm not good at synopsis. But that one branches off into like a separate kind of thing where he is into killing indiscriminate women. And I only mention that because I actually thought that was interesting, because at that point they're not connected at all, but it shows Al Pacino investigating more than one thing,
yeah.
Which a cop would do.
Yeah.
Like it's robbery, homicide, major crime. So he's solving that one and this one. But like, and we haven't talked about it in a while, but the man thing, Robert De Niro is at the top of his game, but he meets, and I don't know her name,
Amy Brenneman.
Yes. Meets her at a cafe.
A really big crush on her at a bookstore.
She works at the bookstore.
She sees him at the bookstore.
Yes, but they actually start talking in the cafe, and they fall in love immediately.
So much of a better scene than the one in LA Takedown.
Yeah.
So it's basically about the guy, the criminal at the top of his game, and the cop at the top of his game, basically.
Yes.
And one has to pull a score off, meaning he has to rob a bank.
In order to achieve his
dream. To retire,
The risk versus reward. The risk is higher, but the reward is just a little bit higher.
Yeah. And Al Pacino's character, Detective Hannah, has to take him down.
Vincent Hannah.
And he has to take him down, and his what he's risking is his marriage.
Yes.
Basically, so...
And Natalie Portman as their troubled daughter.
Stepdaughter to him.
Yeah, stepdaughter to him.
So let's start. Okay. I think we'll all agree that we love this movie, except for Jenny. Jenny, did you like it?
Yeah, I really liked
it
a lot.
Okay.
Well, we'll get into it.
We'll get into it. Yeah. You have some gripes. Yeah, I hear you.
I have some gripes too still, even though I do like it.
So, first of all, I want to talk about just the research of that Michael Mann goes into. A lot of these people are based on real people.
Yes.
A lot of these. And he took a bunch of stories and put them all in this film. Wayne Grove, there was a real serial killer in LA that had a similar MO. And then there was a similar bank robber that Neil McCauley is based on.
His name is Neil McCauley.
Yeah, Neil McCauley. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a couple of detectives that Detective Hannah is based off of.
Well, yeah, the guy he met while doing Thief, Adam Richman. Yeah. I don't think that's his name, but it's that.
But he was based out of Chicago, I think.
And he was the one who went after the guy that Neil McCauley. He's the one who went after Neil McCauley, and they actually did have a sit-down like they do in the movie.
Yeah, in real life.
Yeah, and the two big scenes of when they're going to the plant to rob equipment, and they hear the guy back up in the van, and they just stop and then decide to retreat. That was a real incident in a warehouse where one cop just went up to go to the bathroom and they all stood there and they're like, this isn't good. So we're just going to leave now.
Without anything. And they just walked away.
Yeah.
I like to point out that there's a scene in Neil McCauley's house when he after they pull the first score, he goes home and he lives on the beach.
It's a very Spartan house.
Blue. It's a blue filter on it. And
they
gelled
the windows.
Twilight. Yeah. And that scene, I was always in love with that scene because he puts his gun down on his coffee table and then he walks over to the window. And that scene, for some reason, that shot always when I first saw it, I'm like, that is really fucking interesting to me. And then later on, I mean, I was obsessed with this movie and I still am. I did a lot of research and it's based off a painting he saw. He saw a painting and it's a painting. I have it here pulled up. I'll try to post it on the website as well. It's by Alex Cavile, and it's a painting of a guy standing by a window and the beach is outside the window, and there's a gun on the coffee table. And I guess he went, he was like looking, he was at a museum, saw this painting, and he was just fell in love with it. And he, it's the shot in the fucking movie, and it's like the exact shot. And that, I guess that's why it was so interesting to me. I don't know why, but.
Well, I mean, because if you listen to him talk about it, he talks about how it's almost kind of like this guy isolating himself. And he just loved the idea of just the isolation that he saw in that image with just the gun and this guy just alone in a room.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, I don't know, this movie really kind of like hits everything for me. Like, I think this movie is a lot deeper than, I don't know, maybe it's just deep to me.
I think the deepness, at least for me, comes from like the mythological part of it.
Yeah.
Because like all of these are like archetypes of people. They're not... Every emotion they feel, mm-hmm. they're talking about, kind of. Like, it's there in a scene for you to remember later. Like, him and Amy Brenneman, there's a scene where they're looking out over Los Angeles, which looks like a green screen.
It is green screen.
That is green screen. Yeah, it is horrible green screen.
And where on earth are they that they can see that much?
Yes. Maybe that's why it's green screen.
Yeah. Like, no, it doesn't make any
sense. So he could see into the night. Yeah. But he couldn't do that. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. We'll talk about that. I don't know, for a guy who loves, who wants to tell a story of a city more than anything, like, that was a really weird choice during this intense scene to be on green screen with the weird outline around everybody's head. But
yeah.
I'm sure it looked better not on Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's that scene where they're talking and then they're an item.
Yeah.
And that is just, I don't know. Sometimes that's not enough for me because I don't get why there's not enough of her for me to buy her being with him.
I get their connection before she knows what he does. Like that works for me. Like their meeting
for me too.
Works for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going with him after the fact. I kind of just shrug it off. I'm like, whatever. It's an awesome movie and I don't care. But like their first meeting and hooking up works for me.
Yeah.
Well, because at first it's a one night stand ish, and then like it kind of develops from there. Like that, the blossoming of their relationship works for me.
Yeah,
because I don't think it really matters. I say that, and I had a problem with it, but I don't think at the end it really matters. I think if you took out the love story, and just made him a loner, like needing a big score to like just go off on his own for some reason, I think that would be fine because it just feels perfunctory, kind of.
I think it plays very, you it need does that. Play, you I gotta have that, well. That dedication where he's dedicated to the thing he says, where you have to, what you have, anything you're not willing to walk out on in 10 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, when you see the heat around
the corner.
Yeah.
Which I'm really glad that they attribute that line to him instead of the cop like he did in LA Takedown.
Yeah.
Like I it works for me. I felt like it was necessary.
Yeah, no, that doesn't need to work for the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I guess maybe Amy Brenneman is a bad example. Ashley Judd would be a better example. But then she betrays him. I don't know, maybe I'm picking on the wrong movie for this.
Yeah, for me this is what I like about it. That the two characters, Vincent Hanna and Ian McCauley, like that dedication, I totally get. And just even like knowing a couple like police officers, like I know like out of all the police officers I know, half of them are divorced. And it's because the ones that are divorced are the ones that want to be detectives. If you want to be a detective, you probably shouldn't be married. Do you know what I mean? Right. Like, it's just, that's how much dedication you have to catching these people. Do you know what I mean? And that made sense to me. And just, and also Neil McCauley's, like, dedication to, hey, I'm going to do this until I have this amount of money, and then I'm out. And that kind of was, and just at the end, that the last scene, spoiler alert, I'm going to spoil the ending, when he holds his hand, well, one of them dies. Like, that to me, that's what gets me all the time. I fucking cry. I'm like,
it is super romantic.
Yeah.
It really is.
That is the best love story in the movie by far.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I'm picking on the wrong movie for the like male female relationships to have a problem with. Yeah. I think Michael Mann has a problem with that. He is not the big offender, I don't think.
Yeah.
I may not get the emotion, like I may not connect with it as much, but you're right. It fits within the story.
Well, see, completely. I feel like you're talking about different things. Like Ricardo's talking about the depth of the movie as far as the relationships, and you're talking about the emotion. I don't know. I think it's a deep movie. I feel like I'm in between both of you. Like, I feel like it's a deep movie, but I still don't think it's a very emotional movie. It's more about the bonds of brotherhood.
Yes.
And less about the emotion between the men and the women,
right?
Clearly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think you hit it right in the head. Yes. Like it, like literally, like that's kind of, and also that's the theme that kind of speaks to me, like loyalty and like it always interests me, like how like men interact with each other. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know how men interact with women, but it's interesting how they interact with each other. That's always a yeah. bond that's always interested me, like how guys interact with each other. I don't know why.
But no, I agree. The brotherhood is a good word for it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think especially because we don't I mean, as not only nerds, but like as guys living in this time period, we, like I said, well, like we talked about earlier, we didn't like, hey, we're in the service together. That didn't bond us. Like what bonds right. us now? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's that we don't have that. So that's always, I'm always trying to dig into that. But
the male relationships are very, like, I mean, the relationship between De Niro and Kilmer is amazing to me.
Yes.
And, well, like, De Niro's so, each, I feel like they don't spend as much time on the cops as they do the criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's there, and, like, the relationship between what Wes Studi and Ted Levine. Yeah. Like, and, like, you see, like, the mirroring party scenes.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
which,
yeah.
I mean, it gives you a glimpse of the similarities, but you're not as invested in the relationships with the cops as you are with the crooks, because you're with Tom Sizemore and you're with Val Kilmer, and you're like, you're in their lives. And then even the Dennis Haysbert character, who you're invested in before you even know what's going on, you're like, why is this character here? And it's just like introducing that so early on before it even ties into anything else.
Yeah. I think that's my favorite storyline of the whole movie is Dennis Haysbert. That was the saddest. That's the one I almost cried.
And that's Bud Cort, right?
Yeah,
he was really good in that.
Yeah, he was really good. But yeah, the Dennis Haysbert one, because that is like
so sad.
It's like a B story in the movie, but it is so well executed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, especially because you're like, you're kind of pulling for this guy the whole time. You're like, oh, this guy's kind of trying to straighten out. And I fucking hate Bud Cort in that movie.
Yeah, I know.
But just, a lot of the character actors in this, like, just kind of, well, not only because they're great actors, but they really kind of like Hank Azaria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Let's use that as a way to lead into, this is an amazing Al Pacino performance.
Oh, yeah.
He is, like, he, obviously, man wrote this for the two of them.
He's like, he let him off the chain.
Yes, he let him off the chain. Like in the scene with him and Hank Azaria.
Man, why'd I get mixed up with that bitch?
Because she got a great ass! And you got your head all the way up it!
Jesus. When I think of asses, woman's ass, something comes out of me.
Wait, was there a line missing? Because is the ferocious, ain't I? Doesn't he say that, like, in between those two lines?
I don't know. That was the only that was the only clip of it. Because I had it on Blu-ray. I couldn't pull it from the from the disc.
Yeah.
Because I swear, like, one of the preceding or the next lines is, ferocious, ain't I? Like, yes, you are.
Or when he's interrogating, like, his informant. Yeah, and he's just, like, the way he's screaming like a baby, like, I gotta go! He's just, like, looking left and right.
I just love the first time he sees the informant, he's like, just tell me, did you fall in love last night? Did you fall in love last night?
Just tell me that. I'll believe you if you say you fell in love last night.
Oh, Michael T. God. Williams is good. Yeah. He's the one that goes with him for that informant. What?
Yes.
But yeah.
And who's the rapper that plays
Tone Loke?
Tone Loke. He's his brother. He's his brother. He's got a big ass peacock on his arm.
If he hadn't said nothing, I would have known nothing was up.
But
I love that scene. It's like again, you run into a convict, and he tells you he got nothing going on. That's what you bring to me.
and that's all of those characters. And Jane Piven as a doctor.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's like, give me your shirt. And he's like, no, my daughter gave this to me for Father's Day.
And then what?
I also like
William Fichtner.
Yeah,
as the dude. But
that's the scene. Sorry.
No, go ahead, because I can't remember his name.
I was going to say, that's the scene where, when he's talking about casting individualized people.
Yes.
That he uses that as an example, the scene with William Fichtner.
And Henry Rollins?
There we go, Henry Rollins.
And Robert De Niro, like, right before he kills him.
What's the name of the dude that plays Wangro? Because that guy's creepy.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I've seen him in a lot of stuff, but I can't.
His name's Kevin Gage.
And Tom Noonan again.
Yeah.
Tom Noonan
playing.
Awesome beard.
Yeah, and John Voight. Yes. Let's talk about John Voight's character. John Voight plays a character named Kelso. No, he doesn't. That's Tom Noonan.
That's Noonan.
Who does?
He's Nate.
He's Nate. Yes, Nate is based off of a real life criminal, Eddie Bunker. Eddie Bunker. If you don't know him, yeah, he's a consultant on this movie, but he also was in Reservoir Dogs. He's a criminal that became an actor.
That's right.
He was in Reservoir Dogs. He played Mr. Blue. He's in it for like a small part, and he was a real lifer. He was a criminal his whole life. He was in and out of jail, and that's what he did. He was an LA criminal, and who turned into an actor when people started asking him to consult in films.
Well, and he wrote a book, didn't he?
Yeah,
he did. And John Voight looks exactly like Eddie Bunker. Like, exactly, just a little bit chubbier. But the hair's there, the teeth.
The mustache.
Yeah. The kind of liver spotted.
Yes. And it just the attention detail that man puts into those little things is, like, amazing. Like,
and even though we've talked about Michael Mann's trouble with female characters, I do really like Diane Minora.
She is great. She's also a person who makes choices on her own.
Yeah.
In the movie.
She
has actions at her own.
Wife?
Yes. Yeah. No, yeah. Pacino's wife.
Pacino's wife, sorry.
Yeah.
And Natalie Portman was really good too.
Like, she's great.
Her relationship with like Hannah and like it's really great.
Yeah, I like as much trouble as he has with female and male relationships, I feel like this was the one where he kind of devotes time to the mom and the daughter and not as much time to Amy Brenneman, but like he's definitely fleshing out the story much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a very interesting way.
I think
I got in trouble for watching Heat because it was so long. Savannah got very upset, but she's like, you're seriously watching a 3-hour long movie right now.
It is. It's so long.
It's his longest, right?
I love this movie. Yeah. Yeah.
So long.
I think this is the movie. I
could use an extra half hour.
Ugh.
So he's usually really good at picking music. Despite how Adam would disagree, even though the Keeps Tangerine Dream is awful, it kind of works in Thief.
No, I love it in Thief. I just don't like it. I didn't have a problem with the music in Manhunter.
Yeah, the music's good in Manhunter, and we haven't talked about it. Miami Vice is famous for having great, well chosen pop music for its scenes and episodes. But this is, I think, the turning point where he started using horrible music for scenes and movies. That club scene with Tone Loc has that House of Pain song.
Yeah.
That is atrocious.
I don't even remember. Clearly you weren't as invested in the scene as I was. Because I was just listening to Tone Loc.
I don't even remember.
There's
the music.
Nothing. It's him walking in. Yeah. And I'm like, that's House of Pain. Because it sounds like, you know that it was another track on whatever album Jump Around was on.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like Jump Around, but it's not Jump Around.
Yeah. Yeah. All the scenes with every character actor he makes the character actor shine in this movie. Like every character has their moment.
That's his thing. Every time someone's playing opposite of another person in the scene, they're so totally different kinds of people that they feel different and, like he said, individualized.
Yeah.
That works really well.
So Xander Berkeley played Wangro in LA Takedown. And in this one, he plays the guy having an affair with Pacino's wife.
Mm-hmm. That was funny too.
Ralph. I can't watch his TV.
Yeah. And he's like, you've been eating my chicken. But you can watch my TV.
Yeah.
I want to bring up something that Ricardo told me about before, because I was watching it. So Christopher Nolan's a big fan of Michael Mann.
Yeah.
And there is a shot in Heat before the robbery on like the facility, the thing that they abandon halfway through when they hear the cops. There's a lowering, a pan down from the city skyline onto a truck driving on the city. And even the score is like a slowly building just ambient tone into the scene that is copied exactly for The Dark Knight for the Joker truck chase scene.
Yeah.
I mean, it is exactly the same thing.
And also the bank robbery itself.
Yes.
He studied that for the opening of Dark Knight.
And the percussion like music,
And in fact, I think he wanted somebody else in the cast of Heat, and he couldn't get them. I don't know who he wanted. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I guess the only person available was William Fichtner, which he cast in Dark Knight. But I think he wanted somebody else. It wasn't like Pacino or De Niro. It was somebody, another one of the character actors.
Yeah, and Nolan even said about Heat that more than anything, it was a story of a city, which is what he wanted to reflect in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And then you told me about, I don't know how apocryphal that is, about his plans for the third Batman movie if Heath Ledger had not died.
Yeah.
That would have been in the style of Manhunter.
Yeah.
But like the Riddler was on the loose. Who would be like the Dollar Hyde character.
Jonathan Nolan talked about that, how the original idea was that if they were going to do a third one, it'd be like Manhunter. So the Joker would be in jail. And they'd have to be looking. They were looking for the Riddler, who was, you know, had the city in a siege, and he'd have to go toe to toe with the Joker in the cell in Gotham, Arkham Asylum. Sorry,
like old friends.
Yeah. So
that would have been amazing.
Yeah, like it would have been like Manhunter.
It would have been a good
movie. Oh yeah, I'm looking at Adam.
It would have been better.
It would have been like Red Dragon.
It would have been a thousand times better than The Dark Knight Rises.
I'm burned. So very influential for other directors.
And that the bank robbery sequence is amazing. Amazing.
One of the best shootouts ever.
Yeah.
I've said it before, by real criminals.
And I'll say it again. I think we've had this conversation before about how when Heat was in theaters, you could hear the shootout happening from outside the movie theaters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because of how loud it was.
Oh, the sound on the guns.
I don't know if it was a commentary or the making of, he talks about when they were sound editing the movie, they folded in the gunshots. And he's like, oh, it sounds horrible. What's going on here? And he's like, could we just play the sound from the actual shoot? And it was because they use full loads. They usually use quartered loads. They use full loads on the bullets, and it is fucking loud, loud.
Yeah.
With one thing going back to LA Takedown though, he's got that weird. Wait, did anyone get to the shootout in LA Takedown?
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah.
The weird like tactical shotgun that guy brings out.
Oh yeah.
What the fuck is that gun? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, so in Heat, there's the scene where it's the robbery. And Pacino takes down Tom Sizemore with the gun he's been using the whole time. But the gun the guy's using in LA Takedown is so big, he has to pull out his pistol.
Yeah.
Because if he shoots at the guy, he will blow away the guy and the girl that he's holding. It's like this ginormous, it's bigger than a person. It's a gun bigger than Tom Sizemore. I don't know what it was, but it was a pretty cool gun.
Val Kilmer says that one of the best compliments he ever got was from like a guy who was in the Marines.
Drill sergeant.
And he says he shows the video of Heat, of him changing the mag, and he's like, if you pussies can't change a mag as fast as him, then you shouldn't be here.
That scene when he first sees the cops and just pulls his gun
and
it sets it off is unreal.
Well, the thing is, like watching the making of and watching interviews on the Blu-ray or DVD, the intense like research that not only Mann put all the actors through, but just, you know, there's mountains and mountains of research that they did for this movie. And he had them training with real rounds. Like, it wasn't like blanks. He had them training with real rounds so they would know, like, hey, when, because in movies, a lot of movies, you tend to see like a shootout and people are shooting out like aimlessly.
Yeah.
Where if you could shoot your partner or your partner in crime or yourself, where they learn how to shoot, how to be like specific at their target and be efficient. And they all train with real ammunition. And also, it also helps, like, when that scene in the diner when they're gonna they're gonna pay off Wingro in the beginning, and De Niro slams him into the table, and then everybody like looking, and then Tom Sizemore just looks over, like that's something that
it's a dead stare.
Yeah, that's something that you learn from like doing your research and like being fucking confident in yourself. You know, like. That's a badass look.
And they set up, like, at the shooting range, like, they set up how, like, they orchestrated the bank robbery scene.
Oh, yeah.
So that they were firing live rounds in training and then would just do the same movements with the blanks on the set.
Yeah.
Am I an asshole for asking where the police helicopters were?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because they were downtown. They didn't want to fly in between the buildings or anything.
Okay.
I don't know.
They could have been there. Well, yeah. It is
because
downtown.
That's what allowed them to get away, right?
Yeah. Well, how would the helicopters...
Also, it was in the script. That's how they got away.
Yeah. Because we've seen the helicopter footage of the copycats.
Yeah, that was in North Hollywood.
In the full body armor. Yeah,
that was North Hollywood.
Yeah, there's not skyscrapers in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was like the heart of downtown, too. So.
Or the LA version of skyscrapers.
Yeah.
Sky pointers. They're pointing at the sky. They're not quite scraping it.
Yeah. So, Should we? Are we done with this? I can talk.
I feel like we could just have a heat episode. Yeah, we should probably move on.
Yeah. All right. So, rating starting with Brandon.
4.5
4.5 Really? 5 Not 5
5 baby.
Adam.
Five stars.
6
Yeah. That's what he said.
I'd go with 6 if I could.
Is this your favorite Michael Mann movie? Those who gave it a 6 and 5
Yeah.
Yes.
It is my favorite.
I've got a 3-way tie for my favorite because I really love these three movies together.
Okay.
I think I know where you're going with. Yeah. And I'd say this is one because of the relationships and like what I talked about earlier, like my exploration into what bonds males together. I think this is my favorite. So 5 Jenny?
I'm going to go 4.5
I like that. You're generous.
I think that's the most I would give a Michael Mann movie. So that's
so it's really like a 6
On a Michael Mann scale.
Yeah.
For Jenny.
This is your 5
Yeah.
Your version of 5
Yeah.
All right. Hey, that concludes part one of our Michael Mann episode. Stay tuned for next week where we discuss The Insider, Ali, Collateral, Miami Vice, the TV show, and the movie, and Public Enemies.